Today's program has been brought to you by White Oak Pastures, a five-generation Georgia-based beef and poultry farm determined to conduct business in an honorable manner. For more information, visit whiteoakpastures.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Listen to Hot Grease. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. Today we'll be talking Jack from Brooklyn and tomatoes. But first up, food headlines with farmer foodie Ula Carvel. Ula, welcome back to Hot Grease.
Thank you so much for having me, Nicole.
So Ula, I think the biggest food headline last week's hands down was Smithfield ham sale. Smithfield is being sold. Can you give us the deets, the listeners, the gist of the sale?
Yeah, well, a Chinese group, I'm not sure about the pronunciation, Shanghai, I think it is, Corp, is buying Smithfield Foods, which was really, everyone was very surprised by it, farmers, consumers, everyone's kind of stunned by it. But a lot of industry specialists think that this is kind of coming for a while.
I have to ask you this. I think one of the biggest concerns, if folks follow what's happening in terms of food and China, back, I don't know if it was last year or a few months ago, there was a huge, like thousands upon thousands of pigs that were found, in the sewage system or something in China, right?
Yeah, it was, I guess they're having a horrible disease outbreak there, some sort of virus that's very deadly to pigs, and they think that that's what happened, that the farmer just dumped the pigs into the river, and it was thousands upon thousands of pigs in a river, and supposedly it was like polluting water that people were drinking, not to mention, you know, how disgusting it is to see, but it was very dramatic.
So what's the difference between the ag regulations in the United States versus China?
I guess that's probably one of the reasons why this Chinese corporation bought Smithfield Foods, because we have a higher safety rating than they do. But we have a very strict, stringent food safety regulatory process. So the USDA, and for small farms like my parents' farm, that can sometimes be a difficulty because we have to comply with all those regulations with slaughterhouses, but for large corporations like Smithfield, because they're vertically integrated, it's much easier. And in China, I guess they've been having a lot of scandals because there's been all this illegal tampering of the foods and adding weird things, and they definitely don't have the oversight that we do here.
So I know you mentioned your parents' farm, Spring Lake Farms, which is located, what part of upstate New York is the farm, Ula?
It's Western Catskills is in Delaware County.
So you guys, I know you breed farms there, and I just wanted to just kind of give the listeners the difference between a factory pig, which Smithfield Foods is producing down in North Carolina, and versus the small family farm pig.
Sure. Well, 90% of hogs in America are raised in operations of 2,000 or more. So a farm like my parents is very rare, whereas, you know, even as far back as 1984, a lot of small farms existed, but things have just gotten so consolidated. So, you know, a concentrated feeding operation would have a lot of pigs in a very concentrated indoor facility, and it's very much like a factory. It's run on efficiencies, and it's trying to make as much pork as cheaply as possible, and it usually isn't very equitable to the community that it's being raised in and the farmers that are producing it or the pigs themselves, because, you know, they're not treated as well as they would be on a small farm like my parents' farm. And we raise our pigs out on pasture, and we try to breed our pigs in a way that's in tune with the environment so that they're healthy and happy, and you know, we think the pork tastes a lot better, but of course it is more expensive.
So what is your advice for people who are like, oh my gosh, I buy a ham from Smithfield every year at Christmas. What should I do? How is this going to affect my family? What do you say to those folks in terms of advice?
Well, that's a really great question. I mean, I would look up first to see all the brands that Smithfield owns, because there's actually quite a few brands that you might not think that they own. So, you know, off the top of my head, I don't even know, because it's been so consolidated. But another way, you know, because beef or pork from sustainable farms is quite cost prohibitive, and if you have a family, that could be an issue. But a great way of lessening that is to buy like a whole pig or half a pig and buy a freezer to put it in and do that. And you can ask for the farmer to create a ham for you, and then you can have all other kind of pork cuts. We sell a lot of our pork that way, and you know, we find that it's great value for us and great value for our customers as well. So that's kind of a win-win.
Ola, thank you so much for coming on High Grease and giving us the skinny on the Smithfield Foods. For folks who are listening, they want to follow you on Facebook and Twitter and all that good stuff. Please tell us your handle, and you also have a blog.
Yeah, I do. I have a blog called Goldilocks Finds Manhattan, and my Twitter handle is NYC Ola.
There you have it. Thanks so much, Ola, for coming back on High
Grease. Thank you so much, Nicole. Thank you.
Have a good one. Listeners, we'll be back to talk with Jack from Brooklyn. Keep listening.
This one's called All Them Things by the California Honey Drops on the heritageradionetwork.org. Stay tuned for more Hot Grease.
White Oak Pastures is the only farm in the United States that has its own USDA-inspected red meat abattoir or slaughterhouse and its own USDA-inspected poultry abattoir or slaughterhouse. We partner with Whole Foods to deliver our high-quality meat and poultry from Miami, Florida, all the way to Princeton, New Jersey. One family, one farm, five generations, 145 years. Full circle return to sustainable land stewardship and humane animal stockmanship. For more information, please visit our website, whiteoakpastures.com.
Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. I am so delighted to have Jackie Summers in the studio. Jackie Summers is the owner of, I don't even know, do we call it Sorrel? Do we call you the owner of The Liquitarian?
This is really,
Jack from Brooklyn.
This is a really good question, actually. The company is called Jack from Brooklyn. The product is called Sorrel.
Sorrel, if y'all don't know, you need to pick it up. I'm telling you, I discovered this last year. It is the drink. Welcome to Hot Grease.
It's a pleasure to be here, huh?
I'm happy to have you in the studio. So we have to talk the birth of Sorrel. I'm going to call it a spice liqueur. Is that good?
That is a good description. Now, the government says, because you don't get to describe yourself, you submit a recipe to the government before you're ready to put a product on the market, and they tell you what you are. So if you are botanicals and liquor, you are a liqueur, according to the government. So that's how it's officially described. It's a liqueur.
So what made you do Sorrel?
Have you been to the Caribbean?
I have.
I know you have. Folks who have been to the Caribbean, who have Caribbean heritage, they know hibiscus flowers make the party drink. The best way I could describe it is, you know, the kids walk home from school and they pick hibiscus flowers growing on the side of the road like dandelions. It's everywhere.
Oh, wow.
And the kids make iced tea for while they do their homework. And then the kids go to sleep and the adults put rum in the tea. And then it's a party.
So where are you from?
I'm from Brooklyn.
You're from Brooklyn. Did you grow up in the Caribbean neighborhood of Brooklyn? Did you grow up in Crown Heights?
I grew up in Jamaica, Queens.
Jamaica. Wow.
Yeah.
So are your parents of Caribbean descent?
Well, my parents are from Harlem, but my grandparents came from Barbados.
Ah, there's the connect. There's the connect.
I grew up with this stuff.
So did you grow up seeing them, you know, going to the market down in Harlem, picking up the hibiscus flower and...
Every time there was a party, this was something that was served. This was just a party drink. So, like most people of Caribbean heritage, at some point I started to make my own in my kitchen. But the problem with hibiscus is it's so tart that what most people tend to do is they overcut it with sugar. And then it's syrupy and cloying and just not fun. And because I'm an arrogant so-and-so, I thought I could do a better version. And what you find out is that every island does it slightly differently. Like if you go to Jamaica, they do hibiscus and orange peel and allspice. If you went to Trinidad and Tobago, the more on the spice route, they could do hibiscus with nutmeg and cinnamon. My grandparents would always put clove in it. So I thought you could get a better taste of the hibiscus if you rounded out the profile with other spices.
So you're making the stuff at home. Your friends are coming over. They're like, ooh, make me some for such and such and such and such. And you're like, wait, is this an idea? Or did someone say you need to bottle that?
You know, I've been making it for almost 20 years, and I never, ever thought about it being a market product. But the truth of the matter is, right around this time, 3 years ago, I had a cancer scare.
Wow.
Yeah, my doctors found a gobble-sized tumor inside my spine. And they told me, there's a 95% chance that this is bad.
Wow.
And because of where it's located, there's a 50% chance that even if it's not bad, you'll be paralyzed. So the odds were not really looking real good for me.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, they were wrong. Tumor was benign. I was walking the next day.
But you decided, look, I need to live my dreams out loud now.
Well, here's a part of the story that's, you know, the story behind the story. The week before my surgery, I did the only thing that made sense. I went on vacation. Me, 9 friends, beach house in Mexico, copious amounts of alcohol. And I had one morning, I woke up nice and early, I grabbed a bottle of tequila and took a nice walk on the beach and had a talk with Death.
Wow.
And Death said to me, man, I don't know why this is freaking you out so much. This is not the first time I come for you. It's just the first time you're paying attention.
Well, speaking of, you know, having a conversation, not with Death, but more so with just like, what the hell? You survived hurricane. Well, people don't say it's a hurricane. Superstorm Sandy. If you're listening and you're not familiar with Jackie Summers, a.k.a. Jack from Brooklyn, his production place is in Red Hook, Brooklyn. That Red Hook was basically the food businesses in Red Hook just were like, poof.
Red Hook was part of the ocean. It was underwater for at least 12 hours. It was utter devastation.
How did you recover from Hurricane Sandy? Are you back in edit? And
well, you know, we're back in production, but it's still a long way to be fully recovered. The building took 6 feet of seawater in the basement and 5 feet on the first floor. So, I mean, all of the commodities were destroyed.
Wow.
Equipment was destroyed. The building was structurally compromised. Insurance kept redefining what it was because, you know, they didn't want to pay anybody. And I don't know if you saw it in the Washington Post last week, but of all the people that applied for government help, something like 22% are actually getting it. So most people did not see a dime of disaster relief.
When you say 22%, you mean small business owners?
Yes.
Wow. That is amazing. But I can see from, you know, seeing all the tweets from Manhattan Cocktail Classic that you made a lot of folks happy.
Oh, you know, like,
you're back.
I wasn't gonna let a little thing like a hurricane stop me. The joke I told people was I've been slapped harder by Girl Scouts.
Pretty much. All right, we're gonna take a quick break and come back and talk more hibiscus flowers and sorrel.
All right.
With Jackie. Keep listening.
You're listening to Crying Blues by the California Honey Drops on the Heritage Radio Network.org.
Studio today we have Jackie Summers, aka Jack from Brooklyn, the owner of the Sorrel liqueur. Okay, first, sorrel.
That's a really good question.
We gotta break this down.
This is really easy. If you've had this in the Caribbean, they call it sorrel. But I have a speech impediment. I can't actually pronounce R's or L's correctly. So for me, sorrel sounds like it has no vowels. It's just sorrel.
Yeah.
So I could never actually say the word, but thank goodness to the New York City public school system, I had 8 years of enunciation lessons. And for the record, it's mean to make a kid with a lisp say enunciation.
I mean, hey. So look what we have. Thanks to them sorrel.
I know, but it's called sorrel because I found out in speech class that birds end in a down sound are sad. So sorrel is a sad word. Sorrel is a happy word.
See how you made that happy? I love it.
And I can pronounce it.
So we got to talk. Okay, speaking of sorrel.
Mm-hmm.
Some people, I know one time I was like, oh, yeah, I have some sorrel in my garden. I'm like, well, wait a minute. They're talking about the green leafy stuff. There's a difference. There's also a green leafy green that people put in the salads.
Absolutely.
That's completely different from.
It's the same genus of plant, except one of the genus blooms. And the bloom on the sorrel plant is a hibiscus flower.
Okay. And another question I have for you about this whole origin of sorrel, the hibiscus flower. When you go to West Africa, particularly Senegal, you have Bissap.
Mm-hmm.
It's really the same thing.
It's the same exact thing.
Same exact thing. Same flower. I think they just use, like you said before, different spices and herbs, but it's essentially the same thing.
If you went to Mexico, they'd call it jamaica.
Oh, right. Yeah. It's totally the same thing. So, recipes for enjoying your drink.
It really depends on the time of day and the day of the week. If it's a Sunday morning, sorrel and prosecco instead of a mimosa.
That's how I first had it. Shout out to David Kaplan. I don't know if you know David Kaplan. I was at his house. Really, he's your number one fan.
David Kat,
he is your number one fan. It's over a year ago because I think your product probably was brand new. Mm-hmm. I was at his house and he was like, oh no, we have to top it off with sparkling Prosecco. That was the first time I had it, and I was like, whoa. No, I think I had it before then at New York City Spirits mm-hmm. of New York. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden I started seeing it everywhere. So that's the drink of the summer, topping it with Prosecco.
I feel like we call that cocktail the Ariana, and I sort of feel like, you know, there are folks who are still dedicated to having the mimosa or a Bellini on Sunday morning, which is fine if you're feeling wildly unimaginative. But that was kind of okay for our parents. We can do better.
Okay, what about rum? Recipe for rum.
If you go to Cafe Noir over on Grand Street in Soho, Frank Stilo's doing a ridiculous cocktail called the Jackie Brown. It is sorrel, Montgay black rum, and clove simple syrup. It is ridiculous.
Wow. Now that sounds good. The clove simple syrup. Oh my gosh. What other things? What are some of the pops? So you'd leave it up to the bartenders to come up with the really deep, wild, not even wild, but flavor for layer flavor creations, huh?
Well, the great thing about the cocktail people is for them, it's like finding a crayon that didn't come in the 64 color box. Most of them have never had this flavor before.
Wow.
So it's given them all new options for things that they can do.
I want to talk about the bottle design. How did you come up with the bottle design? Because it's so, like, sexy but simple. It kind of embodies, in my opinion, the whole brand.
I designed my own bottle because I found out that I could get a proprietary design for less than a stock bottle. So that was why I did it, for financial reasons. But when it came to what it was going to look like, I figured there were two people you cannot piss off. The folks who were stocking shelves and pouring drinks. It had to feel good in your hand. So once I determined how tall it was going to be and how much it was going to weigh empty, I went and looked up antique bottles.
Oh, wow.
And I found a 103-year-old cologne bottle on eBay, which I took into Photoshop, made it longer, broadened the shoulders, and sent that to my CAD designer, and I said, that's my bottle. Make a mechanical drawing of this. And that's how it was born.
So what's next for you? Are you going to roll out anything else in the line?
There's other products that I'm in development because, you know, there's other stuff I was doing in my kitchen the same way I was doing this.
Caribbean inspired or?
You know, I want to say that you can do Caribbean, but the truth of the matter is there are these tiny little niche beverages all over the world that you only know about if you're from that place.
True that.
And all you need is someone who can figure out how to remove the barriers between making it a commercial product and how to market it. And it's really unlimited what can be done.
So folks who are listening in New York City and outside of New York City, where can they find your liqueur?
If you're in New York City, you could pretty much turn around. It's going to be somewhere at a bar or a restaurant or a liquor store. I highly recommend, if you're in Manhattan, pop by Astor. Or if you're in Brooklyn, stop by Drink Up New York or by Dry Dock or a Brooklyn.
Where's Drink Up New York? I've never heard of that. Heard of Dry Dock.
Drink Up New York is on 4th and 9th. They're probably the biggest internet retailer in the country. If you don't live in New York, stop by Drink Up New York's website.
Okay, and they can order straight from there?
And they will deliver liquor to your door. How awesome is that?
Yeah, because, you know, that's one of the hardest things when you live, most small companies like yourself, they can't ship directly.
Right.
And it's always, like, difficult to try to find the store, the online store retailer. So, say the name of that one again.
Drink Up New York is one of the biggest online liquor retailers in the country, and they do have a good stock of Sorrel on hand.
Cool. So, Mr. Jackie, if folks are on the interwebs, your Twitter handle is?
It's The Liquortarian. LiquorTarian. That's my mother's word because she don't like calling her kids alcoholics.
Oh, my God. That is hilarious. And when you go to the website, I think that's brilliant. So your mother came up with that, not you.
And the first thing that she said when I told her I trademarked it is, can I get a cut?
Hey, I don't blame her. I do not blame her. Jackie, thank you so much for coming on Hot Grease. It's been a pleasure.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Listeners, we'll be back to talk tomatoes and picnics. Keep listening.
You're listening to Thank You by the California Honey Drops. Keep it locked for more Hot Grease, everybody. I just don't want to tell one. A little thing you wanna know, my baby. Well, I just really wanna thank you, because of you. Well, you did something to me. You woke me up into a dream, so sweet.
Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. All right, folks, if you're living in New York City, no, we do not have tomatoes yet. But if you're below the Mason-Dixon, tomatoes are probably everywhere. On the phone to talk tomatoes, her new cookbook, it's more than a cookbook, but I'll call it a cookbook. Actually, the Savor of the South cookbook series is Miriam Rubin. Miriam, welcome to Hot Grease.
Hello, Nicole. How are you?
I am great. So am I right? Because I know I had a friend to send an email and says she was down in Durham, mm-hmm. and tomatoes are at the market.
That's what I've heard, too. I live in Pennsylvania.
Right. I forgot to say that. You are actually food writer, editor as well. Tell me the name of the paper again, Miriam.
I write a column for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette called Miriam's Garden, and I write features for them. And I live in southwestern Pennsylvania, and I'm very close to the Mason-Dixon line. It's about 5 miles away.
Okay, so you're in the south then.
Well,
but yes, that's what they say, that there are plenty of tomatoes down south. Let's talk about, since we're talking about the south, you actually start the book. The introduction is titled Southern Tomatoes. What does it mean to be a southern tomato?
Well, there are certain types of tomatoes that do really well in the south. One of them is Cherokee Purple, and another one is German Johnson. These are tomatoes that can take the really, really hot sun and the humid conditions and generally don't crack. Some tomatoes came up from Mexico, and they're better able to deal with really hot conditions. So I would say that's some of what it means to be a tomato in the South.
What's the distinctive look about the tomatoes compared to more per se, maybe Jersey tomatoes?
Jersey tomatoes, I don't know that they look that different. Jersey tomatoes to me seem to be more round sometimes, but it depends on the tomato. I think what we're talking more about is perhaps heirlooms which are can be lumpy and bumpy and have higher shoulders and a different type of tomato which is bred differently, a hybrid tomato. So I think maybe that's what you're thinking of. It has a thicker skin, a more uniform look. Heirlooms are not uniform. They're just what they are.
Yeah, I think when people hear the word heirloom, they automatically think Southern, which doesn't necessarily mean Southern. It just means a variety.
Well, it just usually means that they are they're an old tomato. I believe the date is about 1947, that they were literally treasured heirlooms. People might have brought them over from Italy. They might have brought them over from Russia. They might have brought them up from the South, and they planted them in their gardens. So these are older varieties of tomatoes. Some people call them heritage tomatoes, and they have flavor. They are not bred like some hybrids to be disease resistant all the time. Flavor was key.
So, Miriam, speaking of heritage and tradition, mm-hmm. we have totally kicked off the picnic season, wouldn't you say?
Yes. It's when it's this hot, absolutely.
So salads and sandwiches that are perfect for the picnic, what would you recommend based on some of the recipes in your cookbook?
Well, the salads I was thinking of, the wilted cucumber and tomato salad would be great. A lot of the salads that I was thinking of recommending for this, I would make part of them beforehand. So the wilted cucumber would be great. You'd salt the cucumbers, mix them with the onions and the dressing, and then add the tomatoes at the picnic spot. Or the currant tomato and butter bean salad with crisp garlic toast. That would be wonderful. And if you didn't have butter beans, you could make it with frozen lima beans. And as far as a sandwich, the way I'd want my picnic to go, I would bake the bread ahead of time or bring a great loaf of white sandwich bread, slice it at the picnic place, have tomatoes, bring some great tomatoes and a good knife and slice them at the picnic place and have mayonnaise in a jar and a knife for that and assemble sandwiches as you want it. All you need is salt. And
love it. So spreads, when I think tomatoes and picnics, the first thing that comes to my mind is pimento cheese. Do you have a recipe that infuses or uses tomatoes and pimento cheese?
I do not. I think I should put that in the book. That's a great idea.
Or I think you have a blog. You could totally put that on the blog, huh?
Absolutely. I think that's a great combo. That'd be wonderful. But I might want it toasted.
Yeah, I agree. I like the toasted a version of a pimento cheese sandwich.
Yeah.
What other spreads do you have in the cookbook that are great for picnicking?
There's a tapenade. There's a roasted tomato tapenade made with small black skin tomatoes. These are called black plum tomatoes, and they're really, really sweet, and the flavor's very intense. And it's mixed with herbs and chopped olives, and that would be fabulous as a spread. You can make it a couple of days ahead so the flavors get a chance to meld, and you could either bring it with cheeses or use it to make a sandwich with cheese and maybe prosciutto and salami. That would be wonderful.
So, Mary, I should have asked you this question in the very beginning. What made you write a book, an entire book on tomatoes? What inspired this?
Well, tomatoes are my favorite thing in the world, and I was lucky because the editor asked me to write it, and she knew that I grew tomatoes, and I'm a longtime member of the Southern Foodways Alliance. I noticed that you are as well, and so she felt that I was the perfect person for it, and I think it's true.
Yes. And we have to say you're a food and garden writer. So,
right.
I mean, that only makes sense. How are your tomatoes doing? Have you started them?
They are in the ground as of Monday, last Monday. They're in the ground, and the heat has broken finally, so they're looking really good. And I counted, I don't remember how many plants, but I have 21 different types. I actually shocked myself.
Wow.
So there are going to be a lot of tomatoes. And there's a lot of brandy wines, and there's some Kellogg's Orange and Green Zebra and Black Crim, and there's a wonderful Italian heirloom. It's an ox heart, and there are Sun Golds, and it's going to be a great tomato year.
I'm excited. I'm excited about this book. I love tomatoes.
Thank you.
I really didn't start loving tomatoes until, you know, I became an adult. But thank you so much for the book. Let folks know where they can find you on the internet.
Okay. My website is MiriamRubin.com, and my Twitter is MMMRubin, R-U-B-I-N.
And the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, are your columns online?
Yes, they are. They are. It's post-gazette.com.
There you have it.
Is the website for the paper.
There you have it, Miriam. Thank you so much. Her book, Tomatoes, is in stores now. Have a good summer.
You too. It's been great talking to you.
Listeners, thanks for tuning in live or listening to the podcast of Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Remember, you can join me here every Monday on heritageradionetwork.org live. Until then, always take the road and let's travel.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.